Now I'd like to invite Dr. Swan back to the podium.
Well, I would like to add to that by all means be brief, and I will try to be brief as well, but you can make statements, you can make comments, you can make suggestions for political renewal. This is our meeting. This is about renewing democracy. It's not about someone having all the answers. We collectively have the answers. We collectively have the energy, and I hope the courage it takes to get involved politically. I know that now. I've been in it for 4 years.
David, what carrots do we have for big oil to bring them into our tent?
Could you say your name, please?
Al Hunter. Yep.
What carrots do we have to bring oil into our tent, into our camp? I think the most fundamental that we have is a mutual respect. I grew up in the oil industry. At least my father was an oil executive. I worked in a refinery for a couple of summers. I respect the wonderful technology, the minds, the good thinking minds, and the scientific approach to problem solving, and the spin-offs from the oil sector into a lot of aspects of our lives, not to mention the resource that they have developed in a way that we can enjoy the wonderful infrastructure and social supports that we have with low taxes. What I think we have to say increasingly is that we can do it better. And we want to preserve their reputation, we want to preserve their international market, and we want to do it at a pace, at a scale that is responsible to present and future generations and that respects the need for adequate infrastructure, for example, in the area of the oil sands, so that people have the roads, the hospitals, the water systems that they need to maintain a healthy, balanced quality of life, and that we don't go continuously through these boom and bust activities where people are dislocated and they have very little commitment to a place because of the way it's being treated as a cash cow instead of as a sustained development resource where we can continue to find all options and alternatives to share both the resource and the way of life, for example, with First Nations in a more constructive and inclusive way. Thank you.
Gene Oleksin, I would ask what your thoughts are on or what your thinking is or what your comments would be on electoral reform in regards to our present system and what your thoughts would be on a more proportional representation system.
Thank you for that. Electoral reform has to be part of any consideration of why people don't vote. When things are so stacked against change, one can understand that many people have lost hope in a system. And we had 18 pages of complaints about the last voting in March, which we submitted to the Auditor General and to the Chief Electoral Officer. And some 80 recommendations were made for improving our electoral process in Alberta in 2008. It's amazing that we are still struggling with poor planning, poor infrastructure in place, and not to mention the systematic undermining of due process and democracy by not having fixed election dates, not having clear campaign financing rules, not allowing a clear and balanced approach to the boundary setting, not having an open discussion about changing the first-past-the-post election system to some kind of mixed proportional representation system such as BC is about to vote on for the second time. It runs the gamut, and some have looked at the state of democracy from the point of view of all aspects of electoral reform, including the nomination process and other issues. We need electoral reform fundamentally, but it's not a very easy topic to communicate to the average voter. I think the fundamental message is that democracy is being subverted in the province. There is disdain for democracy by this government, illustrated most personally by my firing, but by the intimidation that many professionals feel about speaking out in this province. And it has to change. And it's not going to change until more of us raise our voices and demand better. Thank you. We stand for proportional representation, or at least a citizens' assembly, to review different election processes.
My name is Henning Mundel. Political renewal in Alberta, specifically in connection with the opposition to the government in power, does that, should that, can it involve some form of rapprochement, getting together, working together with the NDP? Does it involve change of name?
Two good questions. Rapprochement with alternate parties and name change. On the first issue, we have made overtures to the New Democratic Party. The leaders are not in favor. The elected members of the New Democrats are not in favor. Fundamentally, I don't believe it's possible for separate parties to actually merge, at least in the context of what we have in Alberta. What I do think is possible is for more cooperation, for finding common ground, for pushing key policy issues that we all care about, a greening of our economic system, proportional representation, electoral reform, protection of the publicly funded health care system. Those are things that we can all agree on. Let's work together and establish some key steps towards achieving those goals. I can't say that we can actually work, although we have talked about having only one of our parties run a candidate in a particular constituency in order to try to stop splitting the vote of the opposition parties. The challenge is that we, all three parties, the Greens, the NDs, and the Liberals, all have the best chance in certain constituencies, and nobody wants to give up the chance to run a candidate in the constituencies where they have the best chance to run. On the name change issue, that is something that I have raised after the last election, and clearly the name Liberal is not attractive to some Albertans. I dare say some in the Lethbridge region would have a particular attitude towards the name Liberal. And I can't say where that comes from, but I will say that my own mother struggled a little bit when I said I was running for the Liberal Party in 2004. There is an attitude there that we have to get through. There is a prejudice. There is an association that has been handed down from father to son to grandson, and there is a mythology now that has grown up around the National Energy Program that, regardless of its accuracy, is diminishing our effectiveness. So while I am taking no specific position on name change, I have said it would be on the agenda for our next convention. And we have a former MLA, Mo El-Salhi, taking forward a renewal plan for our party to try to review our constitution, our values, our goals, and ultimately our name to be ratified or changed as people who are coming into this big tent, this centrist party called the Alberta Liberal Party, what it is they most can support. And at the end of the day, if the name Liberal still reflects who we are becoming and who we are, that is a question for the membership, and that will be open to a vote at some point in the future when we get our full renewal process complete. It is a branding of an existing party. It is not a cosmetic change that we want to make early just to give the impression that we are something that we are not. We are the Alberta Liberals, and unless the membership decides to change it, it won't be changed. Yes. Trevor.
I'm Trevor Page. I have to say that I'm one of those skeptics that you referred to in your statement about politicians. But I also have to say that the last two political speeches that I've heard, namely yours, and dare I say, Barack Obama's, I found inspirational.
Thank you.
But what I would like to know is, having articulated your vision very clearly, how do you propose to get there? What is your strategy to actually achieve getting to a place that I think you'll find a lot of people would like to get to?
Thank you very much, Trevor. So glad you asked that.
Well, that's a good political response, but I hope you're going to get beyond that.
Oh, I was just going to sit down now.
Oh, dear, another one.
Yeah. Well, in fact, you are an integral part of this new movement called the Centrist Party, the Alberta Liberal Party. Clearly, We cannot, as elected representatives, Bridget and I and the seven others in our party, we cannot achieve the kind of changes that I think I've tried to articulate and that Albertans have wanted us to articulate. We cannot generate hope where there is a total lack of hope. We cannot generate a vision that people cannot attach themselves to. And we certainly cannot generate money, the money that it takes to keep the doors of a party open and run a credible election without you. This is what democracy looks like. It's messy, it's challenging, it's different views, and at the end of the day, we have to come around some common set of values and principles and goals that we can all buy into. And if I have learned anything from Barack Obama's campaign, it is that it's fundamentally about relationship. We cannot change anyone without a trusting relationship. I found that in medical practice. It's equally clear and obvious in politics. If you cannot build a sense of trust and confidence and direction with people, not for people, but with people, we will not build a party. We will not build the kind of political change that we need. And we will not change this government in the next foreseeable future. And I am absolutely committed to changing this government. We cannot have another 10 years of this kind of poor leadership, poor governance, lack of planning, lack of listening to people who know something about what's going on.
Secrecy
and hiddenness about information. We have one of the most secretive governments in the history of this province and certainly this country. They have just passed a bill last year that makes it impossible to look at ministers' briefing notes for 15 years after they leave office. One example of the unwillingness to be transparent and truly accountable. And we know we are spending between 23 and 25% more on government services than any other jurisdiction in Canada. Where is the money going? We have a great deal of difficulty finding out why we're not getting more for the increased service, increased expenses that we're making to public services. Van.
My name is Van Christou. Dr. Swan, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Van.
Having been born and raised here and lived here all my life in Lethbridge, I have seen just a continuum of Fed bashing from this province, a province which has been against, like the rest of the country is all against us. Do you see it in our to our benefit and in our best interest, as well as the best interest of the entire country, of our reversing that attitude?
Thank you. That's been a long-standing bone of contention for me, as if we are the most disadvantaged and the most put-upon province, and as if we did not benefit from the federal connections in the past in relation to our own struggle through some of the recessions and busts here. We are part of a family. We are part of a confederation called Canada. Not only do we have to think bigger than Alberta, we have to think bigger than Canada. On our climate change issues, we are clear violators of the common scientific understanding of what it's going to take to get us to a place of responsible stewardship for dealing with the climate and carbon issues. We have to have not only a national but a continental plan for climate change. And we have to begin to look and listen better to how we can find common ground with whatever party is in Ottawa and with whatever party is in the U.S. to, again, put the public interest long-term at the forefront of our decision-making. Thank you, Van. That's a key issue for us.
Good afternoon. My
Hi.
Name is Allison. Many people are concerned about votership among young people these days, and I'm wondering in your renewal plans what your idea is for young people to get them involved.
Well, I think that builds a bit on Trevor's question, and that is, what is the plan to renew the party and to renew our connections with people? We need to come together as a caucus and us nine members and be very clear that we're moving together on this renewal plan, what that renewal plan looks like. And there are some divisions within our caucus right now about what that might look like and how it might divide and weaken the party if we are seen to be reforming and renewing and changing. Well, isn't that liberal, to be open to change? I thought that was a fundamental principle of being liberal. We need to develop a much stronger database of members and supporters, especially young people and organizations that connect us with young people and connect us to their thinking about the future, about their costs and their disadvantages in the current economy and some of the challenges they face. We need to think much more about young people's commitment to the environment and how we can link them in their interests and their energy to pushing for a stronger environmental agenda in this province. I can see many ways in which especially women feel alienated from politics today, and we need to look at ways to make it more accessible, more conducive to women being involved in politics, and that, for example, means not sitting in the evenings in the legislature. We start at 1 in the afternoon and sometimes go through with a lunch, with a supper break, till 10 or 11 at night, and Bridget can attest to what that does to your personal life, let alone your family life. Well, if we're sensitive to women and young people who have other priorities and other needs, we have to be thinking more about a balanced approach to some of those issues. We have to use the new media better, Facebook and websites and a more interactive relationship rather than a one-way communication. Here's what we're doing. Here are our policies. Now send us $100. Sorry. That is not a relationship, and that is not a building a sense of teamwork and solidarity around what needs to change. So, well, I guess what I would put back to you is tell us what it would take to get more young people involved, because many of us are white, middle-aged men, and we don't happen to know what the young people, women, and ethnic minorities are looking for. So we need guidance. We need to be consulting more and listening better to what the changing needs of our population are. Thanks.
Ed Bardock, as Ed. An old man who dates back to witnessing when Alberta joined Confederation, I can only recall three instances where an opposition forced a government to listen. One, when Manning was in power. Second, when another conservative party, Lougheed's, not only forced the government to listen but took power. The last time I think the Liberals came close was with Lawrence Decor. In recent years, with all due respects, the Liberals in the last election didn't even have a platform out there that anyone could say, you are an alternative. What will you do as a leader, in addition to your hope speech, going back to what Trevor said, what kind of a plan will you give to the public to say, yes, I'm not only preaching hope and change, I have a plan. And will that plan make sense to Albertans in this sense, that you don't list 42 projects, you list a few? And what would those few be?
Thank you very much. Right on the money. Apart from engaging people and building trust with individuals around what it means to be an active citizen involved in their political culture, we have to have a concrete platform. And I can't say that we have established that yet as the new and the next Liberal Party. What I can say is that you're right, a 42 platform, a 42 policy platform in the last election did not inspire and did not engage people as it needs to. And we could take a page from Mr. Harper's book there, where he came out with five clear priorities, concrete, achievable goals, and he has worked away at those, to his credit. I won't give him credit for much else, but he worked away at those five key platform planks, and we need to do the same. I can say that they will revolve around those three key messages that I gave today. Responsible governance, where we think about the public interest for the long term. Everything has to be passed through that filter. Number two, diversifying our energy mix, greening our economic scope in this province, and having to do with new technologies and opportunities for training and retraining for those who have been stuck in one particular form of energy production and assisting that development. The third is responsible environmental protection. and many of the industries that can flow out of recycling and reusing and preserving and reclaiming our environment are economic opportunities as well as environmental protection for the future. And finally, a strong commitment to electoral reform or democratic processes that serve the public interest and that engage people, inspire them to feel they can make a difference. Their vote matters, and their work at a constituency level is going to translate into a much greater opportunity to see the kind of change they want to see. Health care, obviously, is another one. Thank you for reminding me. How could I forget health care? So fundamental to everything that I have been involved in, creating healthy communities as a foundation for health, and then a system that cares for people when that healthy community environment fails or when the individual simply doesn't have the resources left and develops the diseases and injuries that we all do. Again, I am committed to a systematic, evidence-based approach to changing the health system, sustaining the principles, but reforming the way we're delivering services to make it more effective, more efficient, and more cost-effective. So those would be four key issues that we'll be fleshing out in more detail, but it has to be something graspable, I agree, and we haven't done that successfully in the past.
Ruth Alzinga, thank you, Dr. Swan, for being here today.
Thanks, Ruth.
I've made lots of notes, and I could go on for 5 minutes, but I'll try and focus and perhaps tell you a little bit what's on my mind and on my heart, because you kind of gave permission that we could share a little bit. And just the fact that we've gone through the presidential inauguration in the States, and indeed there was even some pride that swelled in my heart because I was able to reflect on the fact that both my mom and my grandma were born in the States. Never before have I ever wanted to admit that, but there is something about what's happening in the U.S. of A., and even now, regardless of one's political stripes, 80% of the people that are polled are very happy. We'll see how long it lasts, but, I mean, there is a euphoria. Sometimes I really dislike our Canadian political system because it seems to be the opposition's their duty to chip away at our leaders. And I would like to give them some respect. I would like to give the office some respect. I am shocked when a bloc who hasn't even got representation across the country can join with another party to pull down our government. Why isn't there some respect for this office? Now, in some of your comments, you were saying Alberta is looking for responsible leadership. Dignified, honorable, accessible. I know Mr. Stelmach personally. He is those things. And you have said in your closing comments, what we need is what's blocking some success is the fact that we don't have respect. We show disrespect for our leaders. And we have to change the tone confronting our cynicism. So my question to you, Dr. Swan, is do you walk the talk?
Well, I think the best test of that is to ask those in the opposition whether they feel I respect them or not. I get the odd note and the odd comment from my Conservative colleagues and the NDs in the legislature that they feel I have brought a new tone to the legislature. My opening speech in the legislature was against heckling, and I refuse to heckle in the legislature. I think once I did heckle. I couldn't contain myself for a few seconds, and Bridget will probably attest to that. But in general, almost universally, I keep my mouth shut when someone else is speaking, and I try to focus hard on the issue, disagree with the direction the government is going or the way they are getting there, and I respect the individuals. And again, you're welcome to check that with Mr. Stelmach himself or others to see whether that's borne out in reality. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Alan Wilson.
Hi, Alan.
In order for the Liberal Party to increase its standing in the legislature, they have a reasonable chance to get seats in the cities, but I don't see much that would attract the conservative rural voter. Is there something that you can do, given the state that the electoral map is unbalanced in the sense of certain rural ridings have a lot of weight? What can you do to attract more voters in those areas?
Well, that's a good question, and I think I would challenge your notion that we can't get inroads into the rural areas. We are focusing very much on some of the key issues that affect rural folks, water issues and the contamination of groundwater from coal bed methane activities and unmanaged oil and gas activities. Foresting activities on the eastern slopes is affecting our quality and quantity of water. Climate change is affecting our quality and quantity of water and our growing periods and fertility of our soils. Those are issues that we have championed. But more than that, I think we're raising questions in the House that have to do with what is the purpose of agriculture? Is it international markets? Is it multinational corporations? Or is it the family farm that we're supposed to be protecting and sustaining and our own food supply here that's safe and sustained? We don't see a commitment in this government to those kinds of issues that are affecting not only the farmers and the landowners themselves and their rights to develop in a healthy and sustainable way, but they're affecting the consumers and the lack of quality and safety of some of our food. So quite to the contrary, I think we have tremendous opportunities if we can understand better what landowners and farmers are up against, and put on the table the purpose of agriculture, which is to produce high-quality and sustained foodstuffs for all Albertans and for all of the world in some ways. We have abdicated that responsibility in favor of international markets, multinational corporations, and the fastest production possible. That is not in the public interest for the long term. And so we would challenge that whole priority set, the lack of planning, the lack of clear goals that this government has failed to identify for agriculture in this province. I see some real opportunities there. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Swan, Art Sanford, and it's great to have you here and listen to what the other side talks about. One of my biggest frustrations with government is as I look around the world and I see countries failing and countries gaining. We only need to look at Zimbabwe or South Africa, what's falling apart down there, or what happened behind the Iron Curtain. It all comes down to government. And here we have the highest standard of living in Canada and in Alberta, and it's because of our government. Whether we like to admit why we seem to think we need to complain continually when we're getting the most successful country in the world. But my question now comes back. That's my statement. Now we'll come back to the question for the Liberal Party. And I can remember working on the AUMA Board of Directors and meeting up with Lawrence Decor and having talks with him. Very much a great man, very much in the center. Ken Nicol came along, worked very hard in the center. Mr. Taft came along and pulled the party left. Where are you? And what are you going to do about a party that, when I read the Liberal Party, has many people with a centrist idea and a whole lot with a very strong left-wing pull? How are you going to unify your party? And where do you fit in?
Okay, I would like to go back to your first comment that we our standard of living is due to our government in Alberta. Has it nothing to do with our oil wealth in this province? And if it is to do with our oil wealth that we have achieved so much in terms of infrastructure or support systems, why are we going through another economic downturn with the possibility of major cuts and debts and talk of tax increases by this government when we've had $10 to $12 billion surpluses for the last 12 years? This is not financial management. Where are the savings that have gone in when we have the heritage fund that we had when Peter Lougheed left? I really question the notion that this government could take responsibility for the success of this province when all we have seen is a single-minded focus on paying a debt, regardless of the costs to environment and to social programs on the one hand, and now we see a single-minded focus on development as fast and as furious as possible without regard to the economic changes and disruptions and inflation, and now talk of cutting back spending at a time when we actually need to stimulate the spending. In what sense is this a conservative government with a fiscal responsibility agenda? I don't see it. Now, we can argue this, but my sense is that a centrist government would be fiscally responsible, save at least a third of oil wealth every year so that future generations and tough times would be buffered. A responsible government would put in place high standards on the environment, monitor that environment, not leave it up to industry to monitor it, and enforce those standards, not educate those that violate the laws and say, you just didn't know what you were doing and this is the way you should be doing it, and would fundamentally commit itself to protecting the most vulnerable people. We have people on AISH living on $1,050 a month. Is that dignified living? Is that a quality of life that you can support as a citizen of Alberta? I challenge you to think more comprehensively about what you mean by good governance. Those are centrist values, and I stand for those.